Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Viewing Angles, the internet's only podcast. We've got a special guest and a special segment for you guys today.
We've upgraded.
We've got a new little guest spot. Elmer, do you want to introduce yourself to the people?
Yeah. My name is Elmer. I recently watched the entire Shrek trilogy, and
Wait, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't there four Shrek movies?
Four Shrek movies were made, but there are three Shrek movies.
You got to watch the podcast to find out which ones are the three true Shrek movies.
Gotcha.
Yeah, there's a fake. It's like a joke someone played on us. Like, you have to figure out which one's different.
Yeah.
Got it.
It's like when Joaquin Phoenix pretended to be a rapper.
Perfect. Plug your podcast that you're on. We get the plug out of the way.
Follow at awkpause. Awk like awkward. Awkward pause on Twitter. And there's a lot of good stuff going on over there.
Perfect. Yeah.
Listen to All Hands on Shrek on Spotify or iTunes for the best Shrek puns you're ever going to hear.
Yeah, it's like this show, but with Shrek.
Yeah.
Damn it, I'm sold. Why can't we be this show but Shrek?
The world's only Shrek podcast.
That's the secret ingredient. Not a lot of people think about it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like cumin or something. All right. Anyway, you've got Dan and Robert, the old stalwarts of this podcast, lining up to give you the good content. So
yeah, why wouldn't we be here?
We have started a new segment, and we're doing the Lord of the Rings. This actually doesn't have a name. We didn't even name this.
We don't need a name. The Lord of the Rings, it's the Lord of the Rings segment.
Yeah. Lord of the Rings, Lord of the Angles. We're the Lords of the Angles.
Yeah. One angle to rule them all, and it's ours. You're tuning in to the right podcast.
I like where this is going. These introductions are going to be so much more smoother in the coming weeks, but
that's what don't you worry.
Think. Exactly. They're going to get even jankier. So we're starting a rewatch of The Lord of the Rings and just breaking it down for all you people at home. We're starting with Fellowship of the Ring, obviously. I don't know what the point of doing a mixed up order of this would be, to go like in reverse order of quality.
The ultimate contrarian take.
We got to start with The Hobbit.
Oh,
no,
shit.
We do that. We'll do The Hobbit after. That's like watching Star Wars prequels first and then the original trilogy. Like, you just don't do it.
Okay. I've only seen the first Hobbit movie. Which makes me crazy to like even say the first Hobbit movie.
All right, well, we're extending this whole special because who knows how long quarantine's gonna go on. But we're watching all six Lord of the Rings movies now because it's important.
I signed up for the first three.
Well,
my contract is not under negotiation.
We will get some more color commentators who are even better than Elmer. And who have even crazier takes.
Yeah.
How do you like that, Elmer? You got to up your crazy takes for this one.
Oh, dude. Yeah. We haven't even hit the categories yet.
All right. So to break this down for you guys, we've got a few categories and, some trivia. So stay tuned. I think first, let's just talk. How was this upon your first review? Like, was it not the first, obviously, time that you've seen it since it came out, but I assume this is the first time we've all seen this in maybe a while. What are some things that stuck out to you guys?
Yeah. Also, real quick, I want to give a spoiler warning for everyone that hasn't seen Lord of the Rings yet. I'm assuming that you have because this movie's like 20 years old and Elmer's the only one that hasn't seen it yet, which is why he was such like a rare gem to find.
Oh, wow. Elmer hasn't
seen it. I watched The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring for the first time last night.
Oh,
first
man.
Time ever. And it's pretty crazy because, like, unlike, you know, like, before you see Star Wars, you're like, Luke, I am your father. Like, that just is a thing that, like, you know. But all the things that I know from Lord of the Rings are not spoiler things. You know, it's like, yeah, I know the little dude says my precious, you know, but, like, I have no fucking clue what, like, it's an epic, you know, we know the mission very early on, but I don't know, like, what tricks this movie's going to pull on me.
Right. It is a pretty clear, like, movie. They definitely set out within the first, like, hour exactly what the next 7 hours are going to be.
They lore dump you in this movie.
And it's not even a, like, tip of the iceberg. There's so much more that they haven't included, and Elmer, when you get the courage to try the extended editions, you'll realize that these movies could have been easily longer. The reason that they didn't do it is because no one thought that over 3 hours could be done.
Right.
They easily made them. I think all of the extended editions for the Two Towers and the Fellowship of the Ring both are half an hour longer. For Return of the King, I believe it's an extra hour.
That's wild.
Yeah. It's goddamn. I'll just put out there, I love these movies. I think they hold up real quick, but I want to talk about how fucking wild it is that Peter Jackson got a blank check from Warner Brothers to make these movies like back to back before they even saw the performance of the first film in theaters.
Now, this might be my misunderstanding, but I thought that the first one was greenlit, came out, and then they made the next two back to back. Did they maybe greenlight all of it to start with?
I believe they made all three back to back.
That's insane. Yeah,
they filmed the entire fucking trilogy just from. I wish I could have been a fly on the wall when Peter Jackson was pitching this franchise to Warner Brothers with this budget, and they were just like, I don't know how much coke they had that morning, but it's clearly enough for them to greenlight a fucking. I think it's like over $600 million. In total for all three movies.
And I bet the key is, which is one of the MVPs, you know, we'll get to the segment later, but one of the MVPs of the movie is New Zealand itself. I bet
yes.
They got a lot of money back from New Zealand. I bet the...
Oh, yeah.
I bet the tax breaks for this movie were insane.
Because what else was filmed in New Zealand? Like, this movie, this franchise single-handedly carried New Zealand's film industry for, like, the 2010 decade.
And their tourism industry. I mean, you look at this movie and you see most of the biomes that exist. And
yeah.
It's all beautiful.
I've never wanted to visit New Zealand more than after watching this movie.
Yes.
I still don't.
it's so far away.
It's so far away. And it's beautiful. And it's so crazy to me that, like, they were just okay. Like, you know, it doesn't feel... This movie doesn't feel like it's, like... a gamble or an experiment. It is mm-hmm. so like deliberate and confident that I just do not understand. I need like a good documentary on the subject, on how this movie came to be. One that doesn't involve Peter Jackson, just to give me an investigative piece on this shit. Cause I don't understand how something so, how it was so good, how this all played out well.
Even watching it, I agree with you 100% that you could take maybe a frame out of so many different parts of this movie and just show it and be like, this is going to make almost $1 billion. And you'd be like, this looks like it was made for $50.
Yeah.
Like this almost looks like a shitty B movie that's done insanely well.
Yeah. It's just like so stylized in like the best way. Like it has that like indie movie feel.
Yeah.
While still feeling like kind of expensive and like monumentous.
So part of me also feels like it has that feel because so many people try to imitate this formula post release mm-hmm. for like significantly smaller budgets. So that's kind of the thing, is just that this franchise was like the originator for so many like Western cultural touchstones. I think Elmer kind of pointed out how many things happened in the movie where he's like, oh, so that's where that's from. Oh, so that's where that's from. Like, you were telling me you thought a lot of the stuff was from Game of Thrones.
I swear to God, dude. What's his name? The Sean Bean meme?
Yeah. Boromir.
Yeah. I assumed forever that was a Game of Thrones meme. Because he's in Game of Thrones. He looks like a Game of Thrones character.
Yeah.
The Mordor.
One does not simply walk into Mordor. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fucking hilarious. it is. There's one thing that I noticed is that how it looks, everything about the style of it, it's almost like run out of its cycle for what it's influenced. I don't think there's really, other than Game of Thrones, which we all know ended with quite a public backlash, there's nothing really that has endured. And I think Game of Thrones was kind of the last, like, march. We could have been like, the Game of Thrones is going to be the torchbearer. We're going to get a lot more of these types of series. But yeah, I think probably
the new standard for medieval fantasy.
Yeah, and I honestly, I can't think of too many things that have endured like Lord of the Rings. I think a lot of those adaptations that were fantasy, like Aragon. I can't even really think. You know, the
no, none
of the, Percy Jackson.
Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings has no peers within its genre. Like, Lord of the Rings is in a class of its own, the same way Star Wars is. And, like, I think the closest is Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Because Harry Potter's, like, you know, magical fantasy. But Harry Potter, like, plagiarizes so much from Lord of the Rings to begin with that I almost feel a little trashy putting it on the same level.
Exactly. I wonder, when did Sorcerer's Stone come out? It came out in 2001, so it came out the same year that Lord of the Rings did. And
that's actually wild. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously that nine movies is different than three plus, you know, the next three. But
that's just how numbers work.
That is. You heard it here first, folks. But I don't think that there's anything really that came after this that was influenced by it that you can look back and say, oh, let's directly trace it back, because everything has almost died out. It's not like an early crime movie, you know, that's influenced by Scarface, the original, or, you know, the Killing, stuff like war movies that weren't influenced by Paths of Glory, stuff like you can trace all the influences from current blockbusters back to these kind of precursors. With Lord of the Rings, I don't think there's been anything after it that was very, very successful that you can trace back to it, other than Game of Thrones, which I think people, you can argue about the consistency and the quality of the ending, but I don't think you can argue about its success. Like, it was very successful.
Oh, yeah. It was the most watched show of all time.
But at least on HBO, yeah.
I wonder what those numbers look like across all the networks. Probably, I guess, not as good as, like, you know, network television.
A random Dick Van Dyke special in 1970 that had 40 million. Yeah.
But I guess it was just, it felt like, Game of Thrones felt like the last show to really capture, like, the
ice cooler moment, right? Like, yeah. That the last show, I think, for sure, to, like, capture so many, to be just in the zeitgeist that in that way. I think, like, it's still so niche compared to it, but, like, Tiger King, this quarantine, and then you gotta also credit the quarantine for it, but
right, that's, I think, shout out to the closest quarantine.
Shout out, give credit where credit's due. But I think that's the only other thing since Game of Thrones where I felt like, oh, like, it's almost like shorthand even if you didn't watch it.
Yes, there's definitely the influence. You can watch maybe like any TV show between 2000, you know, 2 and 2012 and see random Lord of the Rings references just thrown in there. You know, You Shall Not Pass, My Precious, that the monologuing or the voiceover that Cate Blanchett does at the beginning of the movie, that is, I think, that's the most iconic part of the movie to me. Well, it's when you first hear that the strings come up and then Galadriel just intoning over this random imagery of violence and fantasy. It's iconic. Like Scorsese's, you know, like, little circle of light that expands up. You know, it's just everyone will, like, know it when they see it.
It just became part of film language. This movie's even referenced in Shrek. All Hands on
Yeah, Shrek would not exist without Lord of the Rings.
Didn't Shrek come out before Lord of the Rings?
It's 2001.
But I mean, the IP, you know, the idea of Lord of the Rings just.
Yeah. That's Shrek was written after Lord of the Rings, for sure.
Lord of the Rings just impact, like, how it created high fantasy, basically. It's crazy. Like, what? It just created a whole fucking genre.
Yeah, Tolkien created Middle Earth. And, like, this was back in the 1940s.
Right, this was they've been sitting on this for a while. I wonder if this is one of the first big ones where they're like, let's dig deep in here and just pull out and see if we can throw $100 million at this and make it very profitable.
I mean, hey, here's hoping that Dune does this for sci-fi. But we'll see.
It's not going to happen.
Dune already didn't do it for sci-fi.
Well, okay, that's because David Lynch directed Dune, not the right director.
I present to you Blade Runner 2049.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, and that's what's going to happen to Dune. Maybe Dune will have
Dune's
going to have that Timothy Chalamet bump. But you also got to think Blade Runner had fucking Ryan Gosling and Harrison Ford. You know?
They're not Timothy Chalamet. Like the tween girls aren't thirsting over them like they're thirsting over Timothy Chalamet.
No, but like, you know, there's a crowd that's horny for both of those other people too.
Yeah. I think it just depends on what the rating is. If it's a PG-13 movie, like Lord of the Rings, like Star Wars.
Oh, yeah,
like,
that's going to help a lot. That's a really good movie.
Is the first Dune movie a hard R rating?
I don't think so.
PG-13?
Yeah, I believe.
Gotcha.
You going to fact check this? What kind of show is this?
Yeah, no, I'm obviously fact checking. I'm just trying not to clack so hard on my fucking keyboard.
Yeah. We're like the Fox News of movie podcasts.
It is PG-13.
I mean, you're doing more.
Right.
Zinger.
I Googled it. Yeah.
How dare you question my film knowledge?
Right, yeah.
You think I would have started the only film podcast if I didn't know what I was talking about?
You think I would just let you on the show and let you talk nonsense without my fact checking? What do you think this is, Fox News at 7 p.m. on a Wednesday? All right. Let's get into some of these categories we got here.
Yeah, let's play some games.
Yeah, let's play some games with this. All right, the first category is, who was the Lord of the Ring, this movie? Basically, you know, who's the MVP? Do you need me to explain more?
Who's the best? Shout out to
Here's some contenders.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'll give it to you. We'll do characters. Aragorn is definitely like a highlight. He shows up.
You got to give me actor name too.
Yeah, Aragorn as played by Viggo Mortensen. Okay. Almost unrecognizable.
He was the craziest one to look at in this movie.
Yeah. I think a big part of it too is like his inflection, his voice is so different to his normal speaking voice.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He's fully in character for Aragorn.
Like, I didn't know he was young.
Yeah,
ever.
Like, I just he's always been old.
Born as a 40-year-old man.
Born, clearly Elijah Wood as Frodo, definitely a highlight here.
He's so sweet. He's innocent. I love it.
He's such a pure little fairy boy. Like, and I don't mean that in the derogatory, but he is so.
He
like,
actually is though. Like, I mean, he's like fairy boy. He's to me the embodiment of a hobbit. Just like these small carefree creatures that are like. Persistently happy. All they care about is eating.
Yeah,
he has a good bit. All the lunches and stuff. I like that.
Yeah,
all the meals.
Breakfast.
All the meals.
Perfect. I think one great part about these movies is that they have, whenever they backlight Elijah Wood, you can just see the hair or like the light coming through the hair, and he does this and sit like this weird little laugh. He's like ha ha ha, ha ha ha.
I loved all of his facial expressions in the movie. When, like, he would just, like, put on the ring and take it off. Just, like, when he was feeling the temptation, his eyes would just fucking roll into the back of his head. He'd have, like, a mini seizure.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to Elijah Wood. Because I do like how hard he's going with a harder job to do. Like, I think it's almost easier to go big as Gandalf, right? Like,
yeah.
You have more to work with. But with, like, a hobbit, like, all you're told is just, like, be warm and be, like, wholesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he nails it.
Yeah.
I think Ian McKellen as Gandalf is another contender here on. I think an underrated nominee that you might not have considered, Galadriel, Kate Blanchett. I think that is definitely pushing for it.
Yeah, she was good. I just love that her character in this movie is just like the most beautiful thing in the world. Like, she's got backlighting in every scene. There's always strings playing.
Oh, the elves are beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, godly, eternal creatures, man. Especially Hugo Weaving.
Oh, yeah that's out.
When you see Hugo Weaving for the first time, you're just like, this is weird.
yeah.
I didn't realize, like, when I first saw it as a kid, how weird it was that Hugo Weaving was the mayor of Rivendell.
Fucking Lord Elrond, man.
Yeah, and who else lives
Elrond
there?
Hubbard.
Nobody. Yeah. Rivendell always seems so bare. I think the makeup and props, we'll go makeup, costumes, props. I think that might actually be the MVP of this.
Yeah.
Because it's all so good.
Just the production of this movie. Like,
man.
Yeah. The sets are fucking crazy.
Dude,
and like Hobbiton.
The fucking Bilbo's house is the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life.
it's
a
so
hole
cute.
In the ground, but it's so cute. Yeah.
I like,
yeah.
Oh man. I would
and
would
it feels
pay
so
to
lived
just go
in.
Through that. Yeah, everything you can. Feels solo-based.
You can. So Hobbiton, they actually built Hobbiton in New Zealand. Like, that's just a fucking Hobbit village that's still there in New Zealand.
Is it like a tourist attraction? Like a ever, like a forever Renaissance fair?
Oh, yeah. And not to step on some trivia, but Hobbiton was actually built a year before production began. So that it had time to, everything had time to grow in.
Yeah. And they could plant vegetables. That's why it looked so good.
Yeah. So it was like a real town, pretty much.
That's so fucking sick, dude.
This movie was made for $96 million.
Yeah. Wild.
It shows. Which is a compliment.
Yeah. $96 million in 2001, though.
Right. That's like 97 today. Actually, I always forget that it's like we're in the future now, so I...
Yeah, this movie's fucking... It's almost 20 years old. How does that make you feel?
Not good, Robert. You got what you wanted? Okay, let's see. What was $96 million worth today? Let's do it. Translate. Hmm.
$110 million.
You should get like a soundboard to do little like sound effects.
Zingers. So it actually wouldn't be that much. It would be $141 million.
That's different. That's a big difference.
That's a lot.
Yeah, you said 141 97. Million. You know, that's more than Marvel spends on the fucking Ant-Man movies.
I mean, I wouldn't. What was the first Avengers movie? Is this like in line with that?
I think the first Avengers, it was definitely under 200 mil. I think it might have been like maybe 160.
Let us check it out. It was 220 million, Robert.
Holy shit. I thought that was cheaper.
I've called the FBI. They're coming down to break down your door any second. Yeah.
Hey, that's my door too.
Yeah. It's okay. I told them to ignore the other guy.
Yeah. So how'd you describe him? How'd you describe me to them?
Get the vaguely. Get the tall one.
Yeah. I said they both have mustaches and are racially ambiguous, so good luck.
Yeah,
all
right. I mean, I think the set design is going to be, it like has to be the MVP, but if I got to pick a number two slot, it goes to Gandalf. Like, that dude sells that hat and that height and that like just energy so well. When he tells Frodo, "Do not give me the ring," I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
Give
him the ring. Don't do it.
No, my favorite was when Bilbo was like, you know, when he's trying to take the ring from Bilbo and Bilbo's like, "You just want it for yourself." And Gandalf, like, all the lights go down and Bilbo, he starts yelling. He's like, Baggins, "You take me for some trickster mage?" Like,
it's like, I'm a literal fucking god, you idiot.
Yeah. Gandalf is the fucking best. Gandalf is a stoner icon. I remember like when they started smoking the fucking pipes too, the Hobbit weed.
They literally say the best weed in town.
Yeah,
that literally like blew my mind, dude. I didn't realize he was like on the Mount Rushmore of like Bob Marley, Seth Rogen, Gandalf. Like, I didn't realize this movie was like that, man.
Yeah, dude. I'm like, why do you think D&D is so popular with stoners? Like, dude, J.R.R. Tolkien
movie on 420 too.
Yeah, this is the perfect 420 movie.
Okay, so I've got I'm going to do this. This will be a fun little corner where I'll just interject every once in a while. Mm-hmm. I'll do a lore check on the deep lore of Lord of the Rings.
So yeah, this is going to be deep lore.
This is going to be Gandalf. So Gandalf the Grey, was originally named Aloran.
Thank you for skipping over that whatever spoiler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was originally named Aloran, and he was an Istar sent to Middle-earth in the Third Age to combat the threat of Sauron. So an Istar, originally known as the Istari, were five Maiar spirits sent to Middle-earth in human form to fight against Sauron. And the Maiar were near primordial spirits that descended into Arda. Arda is the planet that Lord of the Rings takes place on, to help the Valar, who are a... bunch of gods. The main god is Iluvatar, and then there are several other gods. You think about like in Hinduism, you've got Vishnu, and then you've got gods of the water, god, etc., etc., etc. Or like, you know, Poseidon.
You've got Vishnu and the rest.
Yeah, Vishnu and the rest. And so he was So basically, Gandalf is a god helper. He is like a, he is equal to the Balrogs in power. Yeah. The Balrogs are,
which is why that was such a good showdown.
Yeah, there are many different Balrogs, and they're all under service of Morgoth, who is one of the Valar. He's bad guy. And Sauron is a lieutenant of Morgoth. So Sauron, Balrogs, and Gandalf all on the same level. That has been your lore check for today.
So Gandalf, Gandalf is a powerful ass stoner.
He is. So when Bilbo's like, please take the ring, he's like, motherfucker, I'm a god. If you give that to me, that is like giving a nuclear bomb to Japan. Like, I don't. I know I think I'll be cool with it, but I know I won't.
Well, I love that we had that scene with Galadriel, too, where she's like, you offer it to me freely. And then she goes full, like, demon mode, and she's like, the world will worship me. I will be the most beautiful dictator that this planet has ever seen. And then she's like, but I won't. Because I'm a good person.
True, just had to get that out of my system. That's kind of
the coolest shit, is, like, the legend of the ring. Just the big legend of it.
And just how much power there is behind it and how corrupting it is to people.
But and like no one's seen it, but they all believe in it, you know?
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
Get that shit the fuck away from me.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Because Gandalf doesn't even, when he sees the ring, he's like, I know there's magic rings and stuff, but I don't know what that was.
Yeah,
and
I don't know if it's...
He goes away. What they don't say in the movie is that he leaves for 17 years and researches the ring, and he's like, that's the ring of power, man. You gotta get rid of that.
Yeah, I like how compressed time is in the movies. Like, that's one thing that you can't really, like, it's easy to do in the books, and thankfully, like, hobbits and wizards fucking live forever, so 17 years is like 2 weeks for these people.
Oh, exactly. So I think I totally missed that. I didn't realize we were going that much of a time jump.
No, the movie deliberately condenses it just to avoid, instead of having to be like, well, what happened to you guys all these years? It's just like, I'm back. So when Gandalf breaks into Frodo's house, he's like, Gandalf, I haven't seen you in 17 years.
Yeah.
And you've broken into my house.
Because there are things like that where I think it's you know, it's just part, it's a problem you have to deal with when you have so much, when you're dealing with such a dense shit and you're trying not to like skim it down. It has a lot to balance, right? And I think sometimes you can feel, I don't want to call it like clunky, but every now and then you're like, I need to like reorient myself because so much has happened. And they're like, what the fuck am I watching? What are we doing?
Yeah, I think it definitely serves the movies very well to not mention how much time is passing. They're kind of just like, it's going to be a while to get there. Yep, real far. And then they just kind of skip around. And it's just like, now they're here. Now they're here. I think throughout the trilogy, we see that time doesn't necessarily mean anything to us. We're just kind of like, here's the next thing that is happening.
It's not a Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah. It doesn't get all timey-wimey. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Losers.
Exactly. Elmer and I are pretty set on Gandalf. Who's your MVP, Robert?
Honestly, I think I kind of want to give it to Frodo. I love Frodo so much in this movie. And just like knowing what is coming, it's so nice to see him like all calm and innocent and happy. Like watching the intro in the Shire was so like, it almost made me feel bad because of what was going to happen throughout the journey. Because I'm like, he is so fucking happy. He doesn't have a care in the world right now. But also just seeing like the way he plays it off in the adventure and how he still like, he still has that innocence. He has that, like, I wouldn't even call it noble, but he's like a real ass hobbit, and seeing him deal with like all these actual dangers. And, you know, like the first time he sees death in front of his face and like his reaction to Gandalf's death is like, it's heartbreaking, especially when you see like the relationship that him and Gandalf had together in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, they probably, because I believe Frodo is around 50 to 60 when these movies happen. So he's known Gandalf his entire life. You know, this has been like a 60-year friendship for them.
Yeah. And you can feel that just when Gandalf shows up in the Shire again and Frodo just like comes out of the bushes and is like, Gandalf, old friend. And they just fucking hug. I'm like, oh, man.
Love it.
So,
yeah, it's so they're cute. So nice. J.R. Tolkien's impression of the Irish is that they're all tiny people who love to drink, smoke weed.
and eat all day 20 yeah. times a day.
I love it. Okay, let's move this gravy train along. The depths of Middle Earth. Who in this movie is the scariest, most intimidating villain? We'll throw out the classic nominees. We've got the Balrog, of course. We've got Saruman. We've got the Uruk-hai. We've got the goblins. We've got the cave troll, and we've got Sauron in general.
I'm going to give it to the Ringwraiths.
Oh, and the Ringwraiths. Yeah, I think actually I'm going with you on that. The Ringwraiths, even though I forgot about them, are one of the most iconic parts of the movie, and they're just terrifying.
They're great design. They look so sick.
Yeah, and I love that Torkelin, like, it seems like such a trope in medieval fantasy these days, like the hooded rider, but the fact that Tolkien, like, he invented all of this shit, like, he's the progenitor for all of the tropes we see in D&D and other medieval fantasy that branched off from Lord of the Rings, and just seeing it fully realized here was so satisfying, especially when you see it from, like, the perspective of the Hobbit. Like, those things are already pretty big, but when you are, like, 3 feet tall, that's fucking terrifying.
Yeah, and see, that's one of the interesting things they say in the movie, that they're the Nazgul, they're disguised as riders in black. So they're what the costume department, the visual effects have done is say riders in black, these things are not of this world, and then created these like empty black hoods and this whisper snake voice and these like gauntlets that are pointy and scary. It's great.
It's goddamn so fucking good. I did like Saruman quite a bit too, though. Mainly that fight scene.
That's who I give it to.
Yeah. Christopher Plummer's terrifying to begin with. Like, Christopher Plummer has Christopher killed Lee. A man. Oh, yeah, Christopher Lee, not Christopher Plummer. Christopher Plummer's still alive. But Christopher Lee, he's fucking killed a man. Like, he's a World War II vet, and he gave Peter Jackson advice on how to kill a man on screen because he's done it before.
There's a good bit of trivia. Christopher Lee is actually the only cast member to have actually met J.R.R. Tolkien.
That's wild.
That's insane.
And he read the trilogy every year until he died.
Jesus Christ.
He originally wanted to play Gandalf, but Peter Jackson told him he was too old, and then cast Ian McKellen, who I believe was older than him.
I mean, he just doesn't have the same energy.
Yeah. No, yeah, the casting was so spot on.
Yes, it was perfect. I wouldn't change anything about it. This is pretty.
It is pretty sad though, knowing that Christopher Lee was obsessed with this shit.
Yeah, I think. I mean, it's great that he got to play a part in it at all, though, and that he cared so deeply about it that he fucking met J.R.R. Tolkien. Wild, but also I really loved the fight scene between him and Gandalf.
Yeah, that shit. Yeah, it's pretty good.
What I'm confused about is what do the staffs do, and why? I like when he just grabs the other staff and is like, "Now I've got two of them."
Yeah, they just do whatever you want them to do.
They help you channel the magic.
Yeah. They're conduits.
You gotta.
Yeah, exactly. All right. I love when he's just fucking spinning him like a top on the ground, though. Goddamn.
Yeah, because you know that's not in the books. They just made that. They're just like, now he spins
That's Peter Jackson having fun. And it actually gave me, like Evil Dead Sam Raimi vibes, because I know he did, like, Brain Dead and The Frighteners before this movie. But, like, just the way the camera moves in this film is so... It's so kinetic. So much more so than you would expect for a Lord of the Rings movie.
Oh, yeah. It is definitely very campy. It's got a lot of B movie, old horror movie tropes. A
lot of Dutch angles.
Yeah, a lot of practical effects. It's all done in camera mostly. So you're thinking this guy is very experienced with, like, props and so, which is where I think the horror comes into it. You know, the props and integrating these effects to make them as visceral as possible.
Oh, yeah. And that scene when the Nazgul all sneak into, like, the Hobbit's inn and are preparing to, like, stab them. I'm like...
Oh, dude, that scene is the best.
Yeah, that's straight horror.
Yes. Terrifying. Oof. So spooky. All right. Let's move it on up to Ham It Up. This segment, we'll talk about who hams it up the most in these movies. I think these movies are great, but we definitely have a lot of hammy acting. A lot of them just taking the fantasy going. here's some some nominees. Elijah Wood as Frodo. Sean Bean as Boromir. We've got Ian McGloin. How do you say it? For Bilbo. And I would throw Christopher Lee in there a little bit too.
I think you got to get the Bilbo off this list. That was a perfect performance.
Bilbo was great.
Flawless performance.
But I'm not saying it's bad or not bad. I'm saying that he's going hard. He's going for it every step of the way.
No one would goes give harder it, than fucking.
Oh,
Frodo.
And Kate Blanchett too. I throw Galadriel in there. She is.
Yeah. It. She's a big character though. Like she's a larger than life character.
True.
I think I would give it to Christopher Lee. I think he's really having like I think he is hamming it up as the villain, and just the fact that he's able to eat up that scenery and like the sets that he's on, just going full evil wizard mastermind. But I love it.
True. I think you could almost give this to any one of the hobbits. I feel like they're all being a little weird.
Oh yeah, well, especially like Merry and Pippin too. Like they are the comedic relief.
But they work because they're presented that way the entire time. Like they're not real characters. They're You know who they are? They're George and Fred Weasley. Like
true. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's who they are. And like it's like you're not real. It's fine. I kind of love them. They're some maybe my favorite part of this freaking movie.
Yeah.
But I think Elijah Wood, just like what Robert was saying about the laugh, it's like he had the hardest job. Yeah. And I think the hobbits in general had the hardest job, but he's obviously the main hobbit. And just God bless him. Like I don't know. Like he did as good as he could, but it is still so much. Where like, yeah, you're not supposed to be human. Like it's kind of the point. He's not supposed to be human-like, but because he is a human in real life, it's so like tough sometimes.
Yeah, I feel like I'm torn between Sean beating Boromir. I think as soon as Boromir shows up, he's like, "I am gonna do this crazy."
That is the most accurate way of describing that performance.
Because they have to be like. Like what Peter Jackson must have told him is, "Hey, Sean, as soon as you see the ring, you are all on it. You are all about this fucking ring."
I mean, he committed.
And he's like, when he's chasing Frodo at the end, and Frodo takes he goes invisible, and he's like, "Frodo, Frodo, no, please." And then he slips or gets kicked. I don't even know.
Yeah, no, he just slips. That's how desperate he was. But I liked that moment quite a bit though, because it was like him realizing just like how animalistic he'd become in his desire for the ring, and you know he redeems himself like immediately pre-death.
Yeah, him
which is still a
him
great
getting shot with the arrows is like
iconic.
Yeah,
iconic like, death scene.
Robert, what was iconic. It? Was around that scene? Who did I think died? And I was like, are you kidding me?
Oh, that was no. Yeah, it was when Samwell was swimming out to the boat.
Yeah, yeah. Like, at the end when he's swimming into the boat and he goes down like he's drowning. I was like, "Are you fucking kidding me? You gave everyone epic ass deaths and you're gonna kill Samwise like this?"
Yeah.
It was like some fucking.
He's
glass
a fucking
shit,
hobbit.
Dude.
Yeah,
it was so good. It was like the saddest thing. It kind of would have been really emotionally affecting to end the movie that way.
Yeah. I really want to shout out to Sean Austin's performance, too, because I think, like, I just love how committed he is to Frodo. Yeah. Like, it's the sweetest thing.
That's a perfect example of why Elijah Wood is, proof he's hamming it up. Because Sean Austin is fine. It never pops out.
Yeah.
But, with Elijah Wood, you're like, okay, dude, you're weird.
Yeah,
he's just a weird looking dude to begin.
Yeah, you're right. It's God's fault.
Yeah, and here's one that I didn't answer, but I think this might actually be it. Is Liv Tyler as Arwen?
Oh my God!
I don't like Liv Tyler in anything. That's just I just don't think she's a good actress.
Well, you know, who's to say? I I think that her whole, she's doing like the elf thing a hardcore, and it's
very much so
committed, so ham. You almost can't be like, this is wrong, because it is just the thing. It's honestly, I was thinking about this while the movie was going on, but I bet they specifically cut around people saying the names so that only one person got to say one name. Like Aragorn being like, everyone can say Frodo, but only some of you can say Elrond. Only some of you can say Boromir, because you're all saying it way different.
So many fucking accents in this cast. Like,
especially Viggo Mortensen. He's like, everything he says, like, I would have followed you into the flames. Like, Boromir, like Legolas. And you're like, you're all picking ways to pronounce
when
it.
When he says Legolas.
Yeah.
Legolas. Come on. That was maybe, if there was one moment of hamming it up, that's the moment.
I think they fix it. Yeah. Which, it's funny. That's why I think they might have been filmed separately, because they fix it in the next two, and everyone's saying everything the same.
I mean, you can just give them notes. Like, hey, true. Stop saying it like this.
Hey, listen, I know we did that whole movie. Yeah.
It's just so much.
All right, let's keep the gravy train going. The specialist special effect. What's the coolest special effect in the movie? I think there's a lot. I think there's some nominees are anything that the ring is doing. The ring is doing so much in this, from when it just like falls super heavy off Bilbo's hand onto the ground, bouncing down the rocks, when it falls in the snow. It's got so much going on.
Yeah, they made that shit out of like a condensed black hole, because that shit is heavy.
Yeah.
Like, you... Man, I had an answer, but the ring, specifically the ring falling and hitting the ground, way louder than you've ever thought, because they make it feel so light when it's just in his hand. Like that's where you're like, okay, you're a horror director. Yeah. You understand
the ring extremes. Shrinking in a Isildur's hand that makes it like go to his ring size.
Oh yeah. My god. It,
it is I've got more nominees, but I almost want to just shut up and just give it to that.
Yeah, that's a champ.
Yeah, the entire opening battle of Sauron and the Free People of Middle Earth, highlight there for sure. I'll group them together. I think the goblins in the Uruk-hai, the practical effects to make them look like that.
Yeah,
I think that's great.
That's what I was gonna give it to. Like, I think that, and I think that's one of the reasons that the Hobbit movies don't hold up nearly as well as this trilogy. Because they're all CG at that point, but like, this is all practical. This is all in camera. It looks fucking disgusting, especially like when you're going through like the Uruk-hai factory and you see them being birthed from like their gross like sacks.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this is disgusting. But these make for great enemies.
Yes, and then I'll finish off with the Balrog, and then the Ring Race. I think those are two big points.
Yeah.
My winner wasn't mentioned. It's
what's your winner?
It's specifically the moment where the ring dudes are going to like stab them while they're sleeping. And they like pop out like from the dark. It's like a practical effect.
Yeah.
It's, oh my god. It's like
they just come out of the shadows all in sync with their swords out. Yeah.
They just exist. Yeah, it's that, that's like my winner. That was like the most like violent thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, and just knowing that it's pillowcases, you're just like, oh, thank, like,
yeah,
such a sigh of relief they got out in time.
I do want to give a shout out to the brutality of this movie too. Like, thankfully the orcs, like, I guess aren't humans or human enough in like the MPAA's eyes, so you can decapitate them, you can impale them, like you can fucking mutilate these creatures and still get a PG-13 rating. But like they're, or the orcs get fucked up in this movie real hard.
Bad. But I think that's how they get around it, is that they're not people. They just look like people.
But it's like you get a fucking decapitations with blood spurts, and it's like, yeah, that's still PG-13.
Yeah, it's black blood, it's different. We get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I think I'll give mine to the ring, because I think there's so many different effects that they use to make this ring seem of another world.
Yeah.
I think
it's immensely powerful.
Because let's see if any of you guys can answer this. What does the ring do?
It gives you immense power.
Sure.
It rules how? Them all.
How yeah. would, what if you wear the ring, what does that do for you? Like what
makes
was
you a really cool guy.
Yeah. I mean, I think the ring, when you wear it, like all it really does is make you invisible, so that the people can come and the fucking roommates can come and hunt you down. At least that's what it seems like all the humans and hobbits have the power for. I don't know what kind of magical knowledge you need to channel its true power. Like, I'm sure Galadriel or Gandalf or Sauron, like, if you have magical knowledge, it's probably more powerful than someone who just wears it and becomes mm-hmm. invisible on command. You could probably yeah. punch harder.
We'll talk more about what exactly the ring does in, I think, future podcasts. But I think that it's important to note that we really don't know kind of what it does, and they don't really explain it. They just use all of these visual effects to stress on you how important and how heavy this thing is.
Yeah.
Okay. What about you, Rob? Did you have one, or were you going to...
I'd be giving it to Uruk-hai. The Uruk-hai and the orcs, like, the practical effects are... It's so fucking good.
Yeah. All right. Let's go into most rewatchable scene. I'll throw out a few you can pick from or come up with your own. The fight, Gandalf versus the Balrog, classic.
Classic.
The attack in Balin's tomb in the Mines of Moria. The entire Rivendell fellowship sequence when they're getting the gang together. The final battle amongst the Uruk-hai, including Boromir's death, and the opening sequence, the entire opening sequence. I feel like those are the most rewatchable scenes in the movie. What do you guys think? I mean,
my opinion doesn't matter.
Stabbing?
Because, like, I haven't rewatched them, but my general read right now is that it's going to be the opening scene. That was just so euphoric and it captured all the magic at once. And I know later we have some crazy shit, but mm-hmm. because it's so wholesome, I can imagine me going back to that on YouTube when I just want to feel the fellowship. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Honestly, I think I would give it to like the opening scenes too. Like I just loved seeing like the conversation between Bilbo and Gandalf. And they're talking about their adventures and how Bilbo's like, yeah, I think I'm done. Like, I just want to go on an adventure and not come back. But it's just, it's so emotionally investing from the get-go. And just like when they're talking and you know there's a history behind Bilbo and Gandalf. You hear those woodwinds playing in the background. And I'm just like, there's a lot here. Like, the entire Hobbit the Hobbit book is here. And it's clearly not shown in the movie, but you know that there's history. And mm-hmm. in my opinion, it's felt in that scene. And I love it.
That's good stuff. I think personally, the most rewatchable scene might be the end when the face off between the Fellowship and the Uruk-hai. Yeah. I think that's to me is what I remember the most. I think about when I think about these movies, the fighting in daylight in the trees and just showing how good the fight choreography is. And Boromir's death is just a classic.
Yeah. Boromir's death, he dies so hard, but I love it. I love that he goes down fighting.
Yeah. Oh, and also shout out to the special effect. Slow motion. It's everywhere. It's great. Yeah. Classic slow motion.
I think
there's
so
much.
That's probably a good segue into the next section, because that's I think, my one nitpick for the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that...
Nitpicks.
Nitpicks for the movie. My pick for the nit is... the slow motion in it being inconsistent throughout the movie, because there are some slow motion scenes where you can tell they filmed it at a higher frame rate, so it looks like a proper slow motion scene should. And there are other slow motion scenes where they filmed it at 30 or 24 frames a second and then just chopped it in half and played it back slower, so it looks like way choppier and like 90s slow motion did.
Oh yeah, I think that's definitely for effect, but it's something that's very noticeable. And something, whenever you see references to Lord of the Rings, you don't see that. I think it might actually, it doesn't exist in the next two. I don't know if there's the same slow motion.
Yeah, I don't remember either, but we're going to find out.
Let's track the slow motion.
Okay.
I've got a nitpick. So the scene when the Ringwraiths come through the inn to kill the hobbits. So they know that they're at the Prancing Pony, but they can't figure out that they just went across like the street. They can't like ask anybody. You're like, hey, there were hobbits here. Where'd they go?
Yeah, they can't ask.
Yeah. What about you, Elmer? Do you have any nitpicks that you see?
I mean, I think it's just going to be like its ability at the end of the day to like be efficient with time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't even really tell you on just one viewing what I would want to cut. And I know there's an extended version that people stand by. And I think partly, you know, it's just preference on my part that I'm just not. I'm only that invested in high fantasy as a genre. Because when I found myself the most excited was when we were just dealing with good drama. Right? Yeah. That's why I like the beginning a lot. I really like Gandalf fighting with the not Sauron, but the one more
Saruman.
Saruman.
Yeah.
You know, I really like that shit. But I think towards the end, there were so many times where I was like, oh, this is going to end. What a crazy. Like, I know this movie's long, but it feels great. But mm-hmm. it just keeps going, you know? And I know that's kind of the point. It's like the full hero's journey. Let's do an epic. Let's go all in. But, you know, those moments where I was like, eh, I could have used the cliff notes of maybe this. So I don't know. I can't pinpoint it. And I'm excited to watch them again now. So with like out being surprised by shit.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were moments where it's like the highs are there and we never get too low, but there's some like middling stuff.
Definitely.
I'm being super vague, but you know.
Yeah, I'll throw out a few more. So, the heir to the kingdom of Gondor is just hanging out near the Shire at the Prancing Pony, just getting a beer.
Yeah,
like, oh, you guys are delivering the One Ring to Mordor. Cool, I'm the king of Gondor, motherfuckers.
Hey, dude, it's fate.
It is. It's truly fate. And the Council of Rivendell. So they just, everybody kind of sends two people and then they decide, all right, we'll just pick one of all the people that are here to be a part of this group that honestly didn't, it was a bad plan because it broke up immediately. Like the minute they hit any like, oh, we can't go through this snowstorm. It's like, all right, well, let's all die then, I guess. Or at least one
what
of
else
us
are you gonna do?
Break apart, and by the end, it's just Frodo and Sam.
Yeah, so do you think the ring was just too tempting?
If they had never dealt with
the ring before, I don't think they would have even made it. Like they definitely wouldn't have made it through the mines without
Elrond was at. They know all about the rings. They know Elrond was there when Sauron had the ring.
Yeah, that's just Elrond.
Yeah. So, all right, and then my one last one is that, so Elrond knows this ring is, like, the source of ultimate evil, and Isildur is just like, I'm not going to throw it in the fire, and there's nobody else there. You know.
Why didn't he just do it?
Why didn't he just throw him into the fire?
Well, it's because he was friends with Isildur, and he didn't want to, like, kill his friend because of it. I'm sure that there was, like, a nugget in the back of his brain that was like, maybe he can use the ring.
Elrond's been a dude for thousands of years. Isildur is like 40 max.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think he throws him into the fire.
He didn't want to throw him into the fire. I'm sure he would now after seeing like what Isildur's actions resulted in.
Yeah, you know, hindsight's 20/20, right?
But you know, at that time, I'm sure he was just happy to see Isildur like still alive after the battle.
Yeah, and finally happy. He's like, oh, he got the ring. It seems to make him happy. So
yeah, like his dad just died. I don't want to be, I don't want to be
true. His dad did die like a bitch.
Yeah.
That Sauron fights. The Sauron armor design is pretty cool.
I love it. Again, iconic. The Eye of Sauron, iconic.
Oh, yeah. Eye of Sauron. That should have been for special effect. That's one of the more iconic things, too.
Yeah. And this, I do. It's this movie just holds up so well. Yeah. It's incredible.
I used to always think that Sauron's armor was just that's how Sauron looked,
mm-hmm.
and that he didn't have just scary armor on.
That he wasn't like an elf.
Yeah, a little elf boy.
Yeah.
Which I think good choice on them. If they would have made him look just like an elf.
Yeah, they just made him try. If they just try to make him look like a dark elf, like, not intimidating.
No. All right. It's time to enter the trivia corner, boys. All right. I'm gonna read off a few trivia questions, give you guys the chance to respond. Whoever wins gets the most rings and saves all the free people of Middle Earth.
Hell so. Yeah. Call me Sonic the Hedgehog because I'm going to be collecting rings left and right.
Okay. There you go. All right. That's what people come here for, Robert. That. All right. All right. The first one. So Lord of the Rings was nominated for 13 Academy Awards and won 4. Which 4 did it win?
Are we talking just this movie, Fellowship of
the Ring? We're talking Fellowship of the Ring.
Okay.
It won Best Cinematography. Are you going to say, are you going to correct me or not?
I'm not going to correct you until you say
all 4?
Yeah, all 4. And then I'll say, you guys want to tag team it? It's tricky.
No, because how are we going to win? How are we going to win if we tag team it?
Okay.
Yeah, who's
going to only be one.
Cinematography, editing, sound mixing, sound design. I'm cheating here, but I also think maybe a supporting one, but those are my 4 I'm locking in.
All right, Rob, what do you got?
All right, I'm going to go for best costume design.
I'm an idiot.
Is there, what is the one for production? Just like set, is it set design?
I can't tell you the history of the Oscar categories, but I know I can tell you that the Oscars in 2001 were not the exact ones that they are now.
Okay, I'm going to go for...
But I will not say if one of the ones that have changed is one that they originally won.
Costume design, I think I'll just production design, cinematography, and editing.
All right, so... Rob technically wins with 1.5.
Nice. 1.5.
Yeah. So I'll give you 1.5 because technically costume and makeup design is one category right now, but it was best makeup.
No, I don't like that.
Hey, you're not the judge.
We got best cinematography, best makeup. You guys both fucked up on 2 huge ones. Best original score. One of the most iconic scores in film history, surely.
True, yeah.
And best visual effects.
Fuck! Fucking God idiots. Damn it.
What a bunch of dumb...
Yeah, we're idiots. Why do we have a podcast?
Yeah. All right, so Rob is technically the Lord of the Rings right now.
Yeah.
All right. Lord of the Rings was nominated for Best Picture. What beat it? If you get a little stuck, I can help you by giving you what was nominated.
Yeah, give us the nominees. Why is it going to make it too easy?
I might. I don't know. You know, let's find out. all right. Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, Moulin Rouge, Gosford Park, A Beautiful Mind, In the Bedroom.
I'm going to say Beautiful Mind.
Beautiful Mind as well.
That is correct. Beautiful Mind.
Yeah, I tried to sound unsure to try and get him off my...
I think it's pretty well-known Oscar.
Yeah, it was pretty easy.
Oh,
we ruined the game.
Yeah. It'll get harder, don't worry.
All right, so I got 2.5. Hell yeah.
You know, it only counts for that. Yeah, no, you can have 2.5. Yeah, that's how we'll do it. All right. Lord of the Rings is famous for using forced perspective to make some characters look taller or shorter than others. Who was, in actuality, the tallest actor in the Fellowship?
Elijah Wood. It's not going to be Gandalf. You know, it's not going to be some... That's too easy.
I mean, what if it's a trick question? What if the easy answer is the right answer?
I'm going to go ahead and say Sean Bean.
It's the dwarf.
John Rhys-Davies?
Yeah.
You're just going to give it to him like that?
That is correct. It is the dwarf. It is Gimli.
He's as tall as me. That's how I knew.
Is that six. Well, I guess that might have made it easier for some shots, right? To actually have him be really tall as fuck.
And you can see that they only really shoot Gimli in close-ups.
Yeah.
Because John Rhys-Davies is actually 6'1".
Jeez.
So he's the tallest out of all of them.
Why didn't they just get a real dwarf?
Well, so they got, I think the stunt double is actually
short. Yeah.
He is actual size as advertised. All right. So here's another one. The initial cut of Lord of the Rings ran for how long? I'm going to give you an over under to make this a little bit easier.
Okay.
The over under is 4 hours and 15 minutes. Is it more than that or is it less than that?
It's more than that.
I'll tell you that I'll tell you that it is close to this. I will not tell you if it's longer or shorter.
I think less. I bet you it was like 4 hours flat.
It was 4 hours and 20 minutes.
Fuck!
So, Elmer's at 420. Three, Rob's at 3.5.
This is the stoner movie.
Exactly. All right. Now to wrap this up, I'm going to do some casting what-ifs that I think are pretty great.
Okay.
There actually wasn't too many like casting what-ifs for this. I think there's a lot of unknowns or a lot of just bit players.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ian McKellen is probably the most well-known for doing X-Men. Maybe Christopher Lee for being... He was in a bunch of B-movie stuff, like horror movies. He was Dracula. I can't really think, you know, maybe Cate Blanchett, but this is the beginning of everyone's career. Yeah. Everybody, nobody's really like a star, so... All right. Casting what ifs. Sir Sean Connery was at one point offered the role of Gandalf, but he turned it down due to reportedly not understanding the story.
That's 100% true.
Yeah, that sounds like a Sean Connery ass thing.
Sean Connery also famously turned down the role of Morpheus in The Matrix.
What the fuck?
Because he didn't understand the story.
Oh, God, and I would have hated it.
He famously tried to make up for all of these missteps by starring in, does anybody, would any like to venture
the
a
League
guess?
Of the Extraordinary movie? Gentlemen.
Yeah.
That is correct.
And that's the last movie he starred in.
Yeah. And we all know why, if you've seen that movie.
Yeah. Rip in peace.
Do you remember that movie at all? A brief tangent at the very beginning of the movie when they have the tank just going and they had the cop just run in front of the tank, being like, stop, stop, and then getting slowly run over.
I don't remember that. Like Austin Powers style?
Yeah, that's what I think the Austin Powers bit is based on.
Oh, my God. I want to watch that movie again.
I haven't seen it in a long time, but I remember it being really bad. All right. So, originally... Peter Jackson wanted to cast Lucy Lawless as Galadriel and Uma Thurman as Arwen.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
They both got pregnant and were unable to film the roles.
Oh, no.
Did you fact check that?
It's on IMDb, so...
That's the closest fact check we're going to get.
Exactly.
That's the Lord's word.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Orlando Bloom originally auditioned for the part of Faramir, a supporting character that you haven't met yet, Robert, in the next two movies. He was called back and subsequently cast instead in the more prominent role of Legolas. This could have been a different movie. I feel like this is Orlando Bloom, also another bit of trivia. He got the part of Legolas 2 days before he graduated drama school.
Adorable.
He's so fresh-faced in this.
So fresh-faced. And was this... This was pre-Pirates of the Caribbean?
Oh, yeah.
Man.
First starring role.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was... Just give him a slight mustache, and he's a completely different person.
Exactly. Give him dark hair.
Yeah.
That's all you need. All
right. I've got... So, for Peter Jackson, there were two actors who were originally going to play Aragorn. Any crazy ideas?
Pierce Brosnan.
Danny Trejo.
Russell Crowe or Daniel Day-Lewis?
Daniel Day-Lewis would have been fucking great.
Both of them turned it down. Crowe instead chose to star in A Beautiful Mind.
Yeah.
Winner.
He didn't want to be in a role too similar to his role in Gladiator. And... Daniel Day-Lewis eventually just fucked off and did something else.
Honestly, I do think Viggo Mortensen and Daniel Day-Lewis have, like, the same energy.
Yeah, just like very weird guy in real life, but like good acting.
Yeah, very good
chops.
Like immersive actors. Yeah.
Seems like the most boring person in the world off screen. That's the end of casting what ifs. We've made it far.
That's a good bit.
Good little casting. Yeah. So any final thoughts on the first entry, and where does this rank, Rob, for you in the three?
Probably my least favorite, honestly. Like, for me, it goes 3-2-1, just reverse order. I think that these movies get better with each entry. But I'm not going to argue with anyone who has a different order, because I think that these movies are all fucking great.
I think that the order of best to worst is three, and then mix up the other two. I think everyone pretty much agrees that Return of the King is the best by
a pretty
large.
I'm so excited to get to that.
I'm very excited as well. Especially since what I feel like Lord of the Rings is known for are these huge battle scenes that have not even been close yet. Like, we haven't scratched the surface.
Elmer's not gonna... I can't wait for Elmer to see Helm's Gate or Helm's Deep. Yeah.
Yes. Overall, yeah, I think I've traditionally put this as my number two, but I'm very interested to watch Two Towers again.
Yeah.
That always felt to me like the weakest out of them, but we'll see.
We shall.
Yeah.
Elmer, where does this rank for you?
It doesn't rank. Yeah. It's not good enough. Not yet. I need more context.
Oh, you're going to get it. That's what I do like about these movies, is that they continue to deliver more like context and backstory as we go on.
Oh, yeah. Everything's important.
Yeah. All right. Any final thoughts on the high fantasy movie?
Just watch it. It's the perfect quarantine movie. It's the perfect stoner movie. You know, you got fucking 6 hours to kill. They're here for you.
It's a breezy 3 hours, too. Like, it is. It ended, and I was like, that didn't feel like 3 hours at all.
I would disagree.
You thought it felt pretty much like 3 hours?
It felt like four, maybe.
Oh, yeah?
Movies, to me, long movies especially, have always felt shorter upon rewatch. Like, I felt that with Batman vs. Superman, felt that with Irishman, felt that with Endgame.
I mean, yeah, that's 100% true. Rewatching is always going to be shorter. But, you know, like, the Tree of Life, one of my favorite movies of all time, that movie's long as fuck.
Well, you got that
whole... I don't have any prejudice against
beginning of the universe sequence.
I mean, dude, that's... Go watch Tree of Life. Let's do a podcast on Tree of Life.
I've seen that twice. There's a movie that I could not...
Tree of Life is only 2 hours long.
Is it really?
Yeah.
The movie feels like 8 hours long.
Yeah. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
In the best way possible, it feels like 8 hours long.
Yeah. Right. You get to see Brad Pitt actually slap a kid in that movie.
Dude, that's...
That's worth the price of admission.
That's a rewatchable.
That's... Jessica Chastain is in that movie, and I can only remember Brad Pitt, like... And Sean Penn is in that movie.
Is in that movie a lot. Sean Penn's the kid that gets slapped, isn't he?
Yeah, that's why he grows up to look like Sean Penn.
Exactly.
You slap your kids, they end up looking like Sean Penn.
Science.
That's science. All right. My closing thought is definitely go just check this movie out again. It's so good. You can't find it on any streaming service, but you can get it on Vudu on sale for $20 for the whole trilogy, which is a pretty good deal.
100%.
Have these been remastered in Blu-ray yet? Have they?
Yes.
There are Blu-ray editions?
There are Blu-ray editions, just not 4K yet.
Ah, okay. So what's the point, man?
I know.
That sweet, sweet sound, maybe? Oh, you know what? Actually, I think only the extended trilogy might be on Blu-ray.
Nice. As it should be.
Yeah. Wow. That's the only thing I can find. But they cost a lot of money. Interesting. Oh, no. Yeah, they do have the original theatrical versions that are pretty cheap. You can get the three film collection for $12.96 on Blu-ray through Amazon.
Just buy it digitally.
You don't need that trash.
Yeah.
I will say, movies do look better when you play them on the Blu-ray.
100%, but it's a dumb hill to die on.
True. true. Here we go. All right, well, until the Two Towers, that's the second in our Lord of the Rings podcast. We'll see you later, nuts.
We'll be back.